Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today in studio, I have three fantastic guests, local investors, Mike Cantu. Mike Cantu has been an investor in the Empire for probably over 25 years, and he's been a builder, and he's also been a rehabber and property manager. Rick Solis is with us. He's been an appraiser, appraises all the Norris Group's loans, and he's also an investor and a note buyer. Tony Alvarez is with us. He's been an appraiser, a property buyer, a buy hold, a buy sell, dabbled in commercial. Lots of people now are getting in the education space. We're really glad to have all of you here. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Bruce.
My mention, it's the 200th show, so we thought it appropriate to get a few of our favorite guests back in all at one time.
What an honor.
I thought might open up with an interesting question. Mike, I'll start with you. What did you learn in the 90s that helped in the latest downturn?
All things come full circle. That a good market will absolutely turn into a very cold market in a short period of time. It took a little bit longer this time. In fact, I was wondering, back about 2005, did history forget to repeat itself? Just had to wait a little bit longer, and the answer was absolutely no. Everything goes full circle.
Now, what's interesting, it took longer, but when it decided to change, it seemed like it was much more abrupt.
Oh, they just shut the door. It was like things just dropped off a cliff, but I knew that was coming. I had anticipated that. I actually started gearing up for that somewhere around 2004, and when 2006 came around, I thought, what happened?
Did you hear a lot of this time it's different and people trying to tell you that this is not going to?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Tony, what about you? What did you learn in the 90s?
Well, I have to agree with Mike. Yeah, everything comes full circle. I mean, I see it from probably a slightly different perspective because I at that time I was working for the RTC, so I had a different view of it. But yeah, my feeling and my thinking has always been that if you wait long enough and you listen to the rhetoric, I mean, it all comes about. That's, you know, very timely article I have here that was put out the evening of the election, okay? And here's the headline: Obama administration sings new tune on foreclosures. I mean, if you read this little thing, it's laughable. They've gone from no foreclosures, this has got to stop, to foreclosures have now become the answer to resolving this problem. They have to move quickly now to foreclose more.
Well, that's going to be interesting to see if we have policy shifts that's going to allow that to occur. Rick, what about you? Were you investing in the 90s?
Yeah, I started investing in 1989. Okay. In the 90s, I didn't do very much. I did the main thing I learned in the 90s was I saw significant opportunities throughout the 90s, and I didn't take advantage of a lot of them. A lot of times I thought, well, you know, this will be here next week. I can get this next month. This will be next year. And I'm not letting that opportunity pass me this time around. I'm taking advantage of quite a bit of it. So there was, and I see a lot of people ignoring this market right now, and they're afraid, and I'm not making that mistake.
You know what? You just said a very key word to me is fear. That's definitely in the marketplace. And it makes people stay gun-shy, even though prices are at, you know, 50% of what they were and interest rates are flat on their back. It's interesting that seems like a rational decision as much as making a purchase that was, you know, like twice their normal price in 2006. They could rationalize that being perfectly normal, and now a lot of people are on the sidelines.
Yeah.
It's just interesting how human beings are.
It seems to me like this is the best time to buy houses in Southern California the entire time I've been paying attention, and that's probably since the mid-80s till now, and a lot of people are just sitting on the sidelines.
You know what? It's interesting about that. Looking back, it's probably the best time to buy and hold, without a doubt. It's probably, you know, looking back, I'd probably rather have bought in 2000 and sold it 2006 as far as the best time to ever enjoy the fruits of owning a piece of property.
Right.
But, you know, this combination of interest rates. Tony, when you were buying the heck out of Lancaster, Palmdale,
right,
and sold it all in 2006, how long did it take before it got back down to the price levels that you had? You sort of bought them at in the 90s. It was ridiculous.
I think it was about 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually put this out on Facebook. I was like in shock myself. I just bought a duplex, two little one bedrooms, completely rehabbed. They sold, geez, I can't even remember the time, at the peak of the market, basically. In 2007, they sold for $175 or $178. I just paid $35,000, and they're already rehabbed. I don't have to do anything to them. So the rents on either one of those units on either side is about $550 each. And that's being, you know, I'm conservative, which is just, it's just absurd. Mm-hmm. You know, and here's the worst part of it. It sold with multiple offers, and actually they backed out of the deal. I mean, I went to look at it, and I'm thinking, I'm looking for what's wrong with it. You know, what would make you back out of that deal? And that's how ridiculous it is right now. But it is a level of fear. Rick is right about it. I mean, you know. And that's always been the issue, though, you know, when everybody pulls away, you know, and why? Because you're living and dying by these articles and by what's going out there. And it's either that or, you know, you're running to pay some enormous amount of money at somebody's, you know, promise to make you wealthy thing, which, you know, which people can get hurt that way as well. Now, I would be more leery of that nowadays than I would really the market. Yeah. I mean, take the 25 grand and buy a house.
Mike, you know a lot of investors and have for a long time. What have you seen transpire in their life, let's say, from 2006 till now? Are they still participating? And
a small fraction of them are. The term I used is they got voted off Real Estate Island. And the number one thing that caused them to get booted out of the game was overhead and lifestyle. I watched that take down more people, and it continues to do so today. A lot of people figured out how to make money in this business. Not many people figured out how to keep it or keep it and put it to work. And I think that's the other half of this business. But, yeah, the investor pool has definitely shrank, and a lot of people are afraid. A lot of people would like to be in the game, but they made bad decisions in the top of the market to where they're handicapped. They can't be in the game. And Rick's comment about fear, absolutely. A lot of fear in the marketplace, and I like to bet on human nature. And that's people standing on the sidelines right now. I think I agree with Rick. It's showtime right now. You need to get your hook in the water and scoop up everything that you can that's decent, that cash flows, that makes sense.
Speaking of frugality, tell us about your truck. I saw your white truck, and I was thinking, I got to ask him about it.
When I pulled in here this morning, I did notice my 1998 Toyota, good-looking truck. I'm nobody without that thing. It has 441,000 miles on it, and I drove out here at about 75 miles an hour in it. It runs like a champ.
Okay.
I think of my truck like a good hunting dog. It's sniffed out so many good deals. When a dog gets old, you don't get rid of it. You just take better care of it.
It's probably free and clear, too. Huh?
Absolutely. And I have a hard time spending house money on vehicles. When the cost of a new vehicle these days, you can go get a good rental house. And, yeah, every time I set aside money to get a new truck, I end up buying a house and go out and think my truck's just fine.
Now, you have someone in your family that's kind of new to the business.
My daughter. And she has nicer cars than I do.
Okay.
But, nope, we're a year and a half into her plan. We came up with a five-year plan, and it was collecting a pile of cash flow houses in very good neighborhoods because she's a young, beautiful female. That eliminated 80% of the marketplace that I do business in. So we worked two zip codes in the city that we chose, and things are right on track. We set a goal of getting her about $3,500 a month cash flow. We're well past the halfway point, and we're right on track with our plan.
Okay. Tony, if you could go back, what would you, if anything, what would you do differently?
Way back to the beginning?
Yeah.
My career?
Yeah, your investment career. What have you, the last, you know, 20, 30 years taught you about, if I had something? Because we're all teaching people at this point.
Right.
You know. You want us to come back to you?
No, I'd probably stay. I'd probably make a concerted effort to stay, pick one segment of the marketplace and focus all of my attention on that and be really aware of the value of my time. That's one thing that I think I gave away a lot without really paying attention. I didn't understand the value of my focus and the value of my time, those two things together. So I would run around. As a matter of fact, one time I was speaking to you on the phone. I was driving towards Riverside, and I don't know how it happened. I think you called me back from a call I had left you earlier or something, and you and I said, geez, I'm on my way out to your area. And you said, what are you coming out here for? And I said, well, a hard money lender that I know called me because he just took back a house in foreclosure and all this. And I'm going out to take a look at them. There's some apartments or something. And you said, well, what's the number? And I said, he didn't tell me. And you said to me, there was dead silence on the phone. You said, now let me see. You're in your car driving an hour and 45 minutes to get to a property, but you don't have a number? And I said, thanks a lot. And I pulled over and I did a U-turn on Route 138 and I went back home. Now, that's a silly, you know, thing, but that's how crazy I was about things. You know, if somebody would call up and say, because in my mind, I thought, oh, I'll work out the details later.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's the only thing I would say. And I probably, in all honesty, in retrospect, I probably would have accomplished the financial gains that I've made a hell of a lot quicker.
Now, you kept a lot but sold it, and then you're accumulating it back.
Yeah, I'm up to 40 rentals right now, and I'm still, you know, I buy and I sell some stuff. And I kept just under 100 homes, and I actually liquidated, as you know, when, you know, I was working with you at the time, and you were kind of coaching me a little bit on when to get out of the marketplace. I wanted to get out earlier, and you suggested I stay in another 3 years, and it added up to another $3 million of profit. It went straight to my bottom line, and I didn't have to do anything but just hold on to what I already had. I didn't have to reinvent the wheel, so to speak.
Yeah.
So, yeah, now I'm going through the same, basically the same process.
Probably the same houses.
Yeah. In many cases, it's true. But what I've done is, you know, back then I was buying anything that I can get my hands on, really, you know. Nowadays, some of those houses have actually been demolished, so I can't buy them back. But, I bought across the, you know, I bought a lot of wood structures and stuff that other people wouldn't want to touch. But
so you've raised the bar a little bit.
Yeah, I raised the bar. Thanks to Mike, you know, kind of prod me a little bit.
One stucco.
One stucco. Get something that actually has a meter in it, you know, and stuff like that.
Okay.
So.
Rick, what about you? What would you change looking back?
I would have... you know, I study all three of you guys pretty intensely, and you probably don't know that, but I watch all three of you guys very closely. I would have done more like Tony did, sold everything out in 2005 and 2006 and just kind of sailed off into the sunset. I sold quite a bit, and I slowed down quite a bit knowing things were going to get bad, but I had no clue that they could get, you know, as bad as they've been. So I would have sold everything, just sat still. I am accumulating quite a bit now, and that's kind of fun to do. But, you know, down the road, I'm also looking at, you know, I'm going to be managing these things for 5 to 8, 10 years. And unlike Mike, I don't look forward to that. You know, I'm really looking forward to the end game there.
Yeah, you see that, and that's interesting. Mike, now come back to you. I guess I want you to answer that question, but also let's do this first. You knowingly kept inventory you knew would go down in value, and you haven't skipped a beat, and you could care less.
To this day, I have zero remorse for that. That was a 25-year dream and plan that I reviewed every morning and every night. I would not change anything about that because the equity was a byproduct of what I set out to accomplish. The millions of dollars of equity dropped out of the sky. I got into this business for cash flow so that every one of my expenses would be taken care of, and then set it up so that there was excess of cash flow so that the recurring expense would be taken care of. I'm watching more people struggle right now and have to go do a deal a month to keep food on the table. I could tell on any given day how many days till the first. I get a big truckload of rent brought over, and the value of the house is immaterial. I haven't had to reduce rents any more than $50 on any particular house. The rental market is very strong right now, and I'm having no trouble re-renting stuff. So I'm happy as can be to have that cash flow. It was the cash flow I set out to accomplish, not a pile of money, and I still have the cash flow.
Well, but can I just add one thing, too?
No. Go ahead.
You know, the quality of the homes that he buys are a little different and in the areas that he buys than where I buy.
Well, was an intentional, you know,
exactly.
Because he swapped up there, too. Maybe he wanted to get to that A-list only if he could.
Yeah, and that's why Mike had a lot to do with, you know, when we were all attending your seminars years ago, where I actually met all these people, I used to go in there with my little spreadsheet of all my, you know, junker houses. And Mike was the one who introduced me, really, to the concept of, you know, have an A-list and, you know, and a B-list. Or I may not be explaining it exactly the way you do, but... He made me aware of the fact that I can exchange those houses and continuously improve on what I had. Now, that's a concept that I use in my business, period, but I never applied it to my inventory, oddly enough. I was looking at the cash flow, see?
Right.
So a junkier house or a less expensive house, okay, usually brings you in a higher dollar amount. And we're tight management, you know. I mean, we run a tight ship, so that would pay off for me. But, you know, I happen to know that Rick doesn't like management all that much. I mean, you know, and I don't blame him. If I had to do the management myself, I don't think I'd go for it either.
You know, one thing that Rick, you said that's kind of important is that we all look at everyone's business model. When Mike told me his original goal was to get 10 Frankler houses, I mean, I went home and, you know, I have a little bit of an ego, and I was like, well, Mike can do that. Now he keeps on getting ahead, but, you know, that was all of those challenges, you know, you sort of put in the mix and go, okay, would that be smart? And it really was one of the smartest things I ever learned to do was finally set aside free and clear properties because it gives sanity to your
right.
life. That's the one thing, you know, whether it's cash in the bank or cash flow from free and clear houses, we don't have to make rush decisions because nothing is that urgent in our monthly budget. You know,
right.
that's what's lacking with a lot of investors is they're either paying catch up with equity they lost or they're really having to pay tomorrow's bills with today's deal. And, you know, I mean, if it doesn't happen, they got a problem. And that's, I think that hanging around you guys, you know, has taught me a lot of things. Even though all the business models are a little different,
right.
The general idea is, we don't have to make decisions that we will regret just because of the urgency that they took place in.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think that's an important message to impart. Any difference between investing in 2010 and 2009?
Look more cautious, I think, for me in a sense because my market is. I mean, we've had an explosion, okay? I mean, my market, if you can find a few investors, yeah, they're still there, but the majority of the guys have disappeared. So, you know, we still have people buying out there, you know. For example, here's a major change for me. About 80% of my purchases went from being new listings or calls from agents that I know that are coming out with a new listing, you know, a pre-listing, mm-hmm. favoritism, I call it,
mm-hmm.
To all of a sudden, I'm focusing my attention on pending deals that are, you know, they're already in escrow. 40% of those to 50% of my area fall out at least between 1 and 3 times. So you have a house. I mean, most of the purchases we make, we don't even break a sweat going after new inventory. I mean, I'm waiting for somebody else to go in after it because half of that is going to come back. So that was probably, you know, being more cautious about the stuff I'm buying because mm-hmm. I did notice our rents have dropped 20% in the last 12 months.
Wow.
20%. So, you know, my $1,400 house last year that I was renting, and I've lost some tenants this year, you know, if I get $1,200 a month, I'm very fortunate. So you just have to really be on top of your numbers. You have to be really on top of your market. That's become so important, and I'm so glad I've been doing that for so long that, you know, it's a natural occurrence for us every month to just take all those numbers from our MLS.
No, I just want to make sure this is on properties you bought for $40,000, so you're still okay.
No, but I actually, we've been buying down. You know, that same $40,000 house,
mm-hmm.
2 years ago, when I was first getting into the marketplace, is it 2 years now? Or, yeah, about 2 years ago, was 60, okay? And I was looking at that as a great deal at 60.
Yeah.
The rents have dropped 20%. So think, you know.
But the prices followed it as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, but the prices followed, exactly. So
Rick, let's talk about that. I mean, because you follow trends. Because you're doing appraisals constantly and you're
yeah.
also buying. So 2009 to 2010, and then even inside of 2010, what's gone on, let's say, in the last 6 months?
It seemed to me that when they had that stimulus program going on, that prices in a lot of markets, the entry-level markets, not the move-up stuff, almost jumped up close to 10%, somewhere between 5 and 10%, depending on the market.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Adelanto didn't go up any, but you know, versus like Moreno Valley, Corona, those areas really sparked. And it seems like in the last, since July 1 till now, we gave back that whole 10% in most of those markets. And, you know, I don't know if that's going to keep dropping. I suspect that it's going to be flat. For the stuff that we invest in, it has to make sense as a rental house first. And first and foremost, and if it If we can sell it and make a profit, we might do that. But if it wouldn't make sense as a rental, then we just don't buy because, you know, I don't know where it's going.
Yeah, you can get stuck with something that's it looks great until you have to pay for it monthly for 6 months.
Yeah.
When it doesn't sell.
I've seen a lot of investors make that mistake lately.
Yeah.
And stuff that they are going to be stuck with for a very long time and they didn't anticipate it going in and they're not going to be pleased.
Yeah. That's a lesson I learned in the 90s. Don't add too many zeros to the back end. They don't get solved very well. I don't buy anything with lease land either. Mike, what about you? Any different in the market that you've seen in 2010 versus 2009?
Yeah, definitely some difference in there. I think beginning of 2009, we were still without much traction as far as values goes, and there was still some uncertainty in the market. The second half of 2009, there was a lot more confidence in the marketplace. But starting back in 2008, I had very similar criteria to Rick here, and that was I was not going to do a retail deal on anything that I wouldn't be really happy to keep as a rental property, which created a lot of weird emotional situations for me because as soon as I'd get an offer on something, I would have seller's remorse thinking I'm supposed to be keeping this house. But once I got my check, I would think that wasn't so bad. Let's do that one again. Now, the thing that I'm seeing in the second half of 2010 as a wholesaler, I'm constantly in touch with other investors that do the retail game, and the July prices, we don't even use any July comps anymore. It's got to be August, September, October, and there is anywhere from a 5 to 20% difference in there. I'm wholesaling a house right now that four doors down the street, we had a comp late July, and it was a 210, and when I offered that to my two buyers, that was an absolute product that they go after. They both blurted out, that's a 190 house. And so I'm seeing 5 to 20% difference downward in the post-stimulus market here.
You're dealing with private owners quite, well, I don't know if it's quite a bit, but you're still talking to people that own homes.
Absolutely.
What about their sense of their strength in the market? You know, we own a house. If you called, if you had people calling in 06, it would be, you know, we've got the greatest thing since sliced bread. Has there been an attitude change from 09 to 2010 about their position?
There's been some, but there's still a lot of denial in the marketplace. I had an interesting conversation the other day with a fairly elderly lady that had a fairly large portfolio, and we agreed on the retail value of it, and as I backed my way down to the right number to buy it at, she says, I'm not interested in selling that cheap. And I said, did we miss any numbers here? Let's start at the top again. She says, oh, no, I understand everything we talked about. I'm just not interested in selling that cheap. If you can add $50,000 onto the price, we'll go to escrow. And there was no rhyme or reason or any way to possibly justify $5,000 increase, let alone $50,000. So a lot of the private market is still in denial, but time and circumstances change all sellers. I occasionally get somebody that's just, they're ready to unown the property by sundown. So there's still those people out there.
Okay. Rick, you're in the rental market as well as they are.
Yes.
So up in the high desert, is that where most of the rentals are? You have Rialto as
yes.
well?
Yes. A little bit in Rialto, but mostly Hesperia, Victorville.
Okay, because that would seem to, I would just have looked at the Palmdale market, and that is sort of similar as far as.
That's an amazing coincidence, isn't it?
So rents.
That I would copy Tony's plan to the letter. Wow, hard to believe.
So what about rents? Are they
our houses? I've kind of being the appraiser for the Norse Group, I get to see everybody's stuff. So I rehab, or me and my business partner rehab our stuff, similar to the way Mike does his houses, and we rent them a little bit below market, but they're in such good shape that we have a huge demand for them. So many times we have a security deposit and a tenant lined up before we even close escrow. And we aren't having a problem with the rents dropping. And
okay, you are not.
We have a lot of qualified, good families that used to be homeowners wanting to rent our properties.
Okay, we got about 30 seconds left.
Are you keeping, if I may ask just one question quickly, are you buying three-bedroom, two-baths, or are you going larger than that?
Three-bedroom, two-bath, and I love if I can squeeze a fourth bedroom out of cutting that living room in half, or there's a non-permitted fourth bedroom off the back of the garage or something. I can get an extra $100 for that all day long.
What kind of rent?
We usually get 11 for the 1400 or the four bedrooms and 1000 for the three bedrooms.
God, no wonder he's renting them up quick.
Well, the other landlords are probably $50 higher than me,
really?
But their houses are kind of junk.
Okay, we got to call it this segment. And thanks for joining us, and we will pick this interview up. next week.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.